Hello, and welcome to Walking with the Tengu, a podcast exploring classic texts for the modern martial artist. Just a quick note before we get into the episode today. Years ago, when I started the podcast, I did a personal review of the available tools and decided on using Anchor.fm as my tool of choice for a variety of reasons. However, a little over a year later, Spotify purchased Anchor.fm and said not to worry, they were keeping everything just the way it was. Well, here we are a few more years later, and it turns out they're dumping all of their podcast recording tools, which is what I've been using this whole time. So I'm trying a new set of recording software today. Hence, the episodes will likely begin to sound a bit different, but I'll learn as I go and do my best to get something better as time goes on. As always, feel free to reach out to me over email or on social media to let me know what is working and what is not working. Thank you. All right, I'm going to do something new today. Well, sort of new. See, centuries ago, the idea of writing training knowledge on a scroll was new. It was cutting edge, the latest in martial arts educational tools. Of late, I've been thinking about how the transmission of information has changed among humans. There was a time when information was transmitted solely orally. There's a reason poetry and songs were perhaps some of the earliest means of passing information on. It's because it's pretty easy, with some repetition, to remember the words of a song. Put it to music, and it sticks in our heads. My own children can complete this line if I say, like a good neighbor, even at their young age, can say State Farm is there. Because they've heard the ads, they've heard the jingle, the music, the repetition. And I suspect this principle is why in old Chinese martial arts manuals, you'll at times find techniques accompanied with a few lines of poetry. When your soldiers and students are not literate, sometimes the best way to get concepts taught, communicated, and remembered is through simple poetic verse. I suspect this is why there are so many absurd names for techniques in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. They trigger a memory that allows the practitioner to remember the technique. A flower sweep, a scissors sweep, a tripod sweep all call to mind pictures that help me remember how to do each. One of the earliest examples of martial knowledge that I know of currently is the tomb of Bakhet III in Beni Hassan, Egypt, which shows a mixture of standing and ground wrestling techniques painted on the wall. We don't even know what their rule set was or if the practice had a name, but anyone that's done some grappling can look at those 4,000-year-old pictures and recognize what is being done. Then there are the bardic and skaldic traditions from Europe and Scandinavia, but let's not forget, people started writing things down. Tablets and scrolls allowed one to communicate information more consistently and permanently. We have papyrus fragments in Greece detailing wrestling techniques. And, eventually, the book was invented. Like in previous eras, martial artists used the latest technology to communicate ideas. In Germany, we have the rise of the Fechtbuch, literally translated as fencing book, which includes sections not just on fencing, but on other aspects of the martial arts, such as armed and unarmed grappling. There are, of course, similar examples in Britain, France, Spain, and Italy. I've even found a lavishly illustrated Dutch manual detailing self-defense grappling techniques against a striking opponent. This transmission of information in scrolls and books is why we can talk about books like The Art of War, The Book of Five Rings, and The Heihō Kodensho today. Would podcasting be considered another method of martial information transmission? Will digital information find a way to survive into future eras, or will they disappear into nothingness as formats and technology are forgotten and made obsolete? It's easy, personally, for me to be cynical about our current methods of storing information. We have proven track records for clay tablets, scrolls, carved monuments, sealed paintings in tombs, and books. But how will digital information survive? Now, I'm not saying there was, but if there had been a prior digital age, now lost, we might see the remnants of that age, perhaps stored in a time capsule. Discs or other storage devices, the tools to read and write that information. But could we reverse engineer them? The Library of Alexandria disappeared in fire. and there are numerous references to books that no longer exist in known works. It's always curious to me when I come across a Greek, Roman, or Chinese work that talks about or quotes a book that we have since lost. So it's not that one particular medium is better than another. They're just different. Some survive in different ways than others, and perhaps some require more to be able to be preserved and eventually translated for a new ear. Which brings me to what may be the latest in this long tradition of transmitting information. Video. Perhaps it is just the latest in the available means of transmitting martial knowledge and ideas. Who knows what comes next? I've seen some people who are hooking up martial artists to motion capture suits to record what they do, and perhaps someday we'll be able to use that sort of data more widely. For some time now, there has been increasing amounts of martial arts instruction to be found on video. Just as one cannot learn a martial art from a book, so too is it that one cannot learn a martial art from a video. However, I have found it quite useful in developing my existing martial arts training. I can now face a problem in my Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu training, look up numerous videos from a variety of sources, put together a solution, test it with training partners, and then put it into application in matches. I have numerous real-world applications of training and execution of martial arts techniques under pressure that originated first in video, then with a training partner, and then with a non-compliant opponent. So when someone decided to write down Greek wrestling techniques on a papyrus in the 2nd century AD, and when Musashi decided to put down martial arts thoughts and techniques in 1645 AD, would they not have also used the latest technology if they lived today? It's been almost 400 years since Musashi put pen to paper. In 400 years from now, will some archival footage of one of our martial arts be found buried in an archaeological dig? And if so, will anyone be able to play it? Obviously, I don't know. Even written knowledge can be lost and fragmented. Languages are forgotten, and it is only through finding things like the Rosetta Stone and linguistic analysis that forgotten languages can be decoded. Whether or not to commit information to one medium or another is not for me to decide. What I have come to think, though, is that the video is just the latest of possible methods for recording martial information, as robust and useful as a book, if perhaps in different ways. Ultimately, humans may be the best receptacle for embodied knowledge. A body can remember and pass on techniques in ways that books and videos cannot. So we are left with these imperfect vessels of books and videos to supplement and support our training. A couple episodes ago, we looked at Onoha Itoryu's latest book and a few of the stories contained within. If you listen to that one, then maybe you have an idea of how we can learn martial lessons from works that seem entirely disconnected from our own. With this in mind, I'd like to take a look at the latest Onoha Itoryu Kenjutsu volume from Budo Japan. It was released in December of 2023, and I've included a link in the show notes. Budo Japan is the English variation of the Hiden magazine brand from Japan. They sell a variety of videos through their DVD and VOD, that is, video on demand service through Vimeo. You can download the videos, and subtitle files are provided. Apparently, the video on demand service is not actually available to their Japanese audience, so if that is you, then DVDs may be your only option. I'm usually pretty skeptical about martial arts videos. I've seen more than my share that are a complete waste of time and money. To be fair, that's probably my default stance whenever faced with a new martial arts video. In the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu world, there are thousands of instructional videos for very high prices on every minute little detail you can possibly think of in a grappling match. Everyone with a bit of fame inevitably comes out with an instructional on BJJ Fanatics, and the more your fame, the more you can command a high price. However, it is my humble opinion that for most people, they are better off not buying the $1,000 instructional on the latest upside-down zombie dog ramen guard, and just train the fundamentals in more detail. Now, something happened with Budo Japan, though, that changed my mind. A year or two ago, I got a survey that offered a chance to win access to some of their videos. I filled out their survey and then promptly forgot about it. To my surprise, a short while later, I found out that I had won and got to view a set of their online instructional videos. One was a generic martial arts video by the recently deceased Kurodo Tetsuzen. Another was on Aikido. There was also a karate instructional. And then the one that really got my attention, a video about Kashima Shinryu, one of the older classical Japanese martial arts that is still being practiced. I was surprised at the quality of this Kashima Shinryu video. My Japanese isn't good enough to watch it without subtitles, so I was quite happy to find the subtitles easy to understand. And they helped with my Japanese listening practice. The videography was excellent. The angles, explanations, and content were all presented in an understandable fashion. Now, I had recently started Iaido at the time and was really looking at sword arts for the first time with an eye to try and understand what I was seeing and reflect on it in my own training. All this placed on top of the fact that their videos were not overpriced caused me to look much more closely at their video offerings than I had ever before. Obviously, I'm grappling-centric, so I then purchased a sumo training video and was not disappointed. And after having read that most recent Onoha Itoryu book, and having read the former headmaster's book a few years prior, I then found out there was going to be a new Onoha Itoryu video through Budo Japan, and based on what I knew of their standard of quality so far, I felt far more open to purchasing this new video. So, what are you going to get from this video? Unless you already practice Onoha Itoryu, I would suggest don't get this video to try and learn practical Onoha Itoryu Kenjutsu techniques. You need someone who already knows Onoha Itoryu to do that. Maybe practitioners can use this video as a reference because they already have practical experiential knowledge of the techniques shown, but I wouldn't know. I don't practice Onoha Itoryu. As mentioned earlier, I took up Iaido a few years ago. Long story short, I wasn't feeling like I was getting much martial art from my BJJ training, so I wanted to supplement it with something more Budo, by which I mean something that drove me to be a higher version of myself. I wasn't expecting it, honestly. I thought Iaido was going to be mostly beneficial in a mental capacity. However, I eventually started seeing Iaido improve how I move my body in BJJ. The first came from something simple, how I was rotating my knee during armbars from a mounted position. I had been successful plenty of times with this basic submission, but it always felt kind of awkward and more out of control than I preferred. When I applied the lower body movement methods from the fourth Iaido kata to my armbar, suddenly it was smooth and crisp. From that day forward, Iaido had changed the way I move my body in other contexts. Eventually, I found other ways to be more efficient with my movement. One of my training partners mentioned that he couldn't foot sweep me anymore because I had changed my footwork. And that was the day I realized the footwork we use in Iaido was spilling over into my BJJ. So if you're not going to learn Onoha Itoryu from this video, why get it at all? Well, the first reason is maybe you're interested in Onoha Itoryu. At the time of this recording, there's a seminar with Yuji Yabuki, the latest headmaster here in the U.S., happening in a few weeks. If you wanted to get a better idea of what kind of training you'd be getting yourself into, well, then this video would certainly be worth your time, especially if you wanted to show up to the seminar prepared, which, quite frankly, if you're interested in a koryu, classical Japanese martial art, well, then that's the kind of preparation and forethought you probably need to even be considered as a potential member of a ryu. Now, there was a time when much of this training was a kind of military secret. It wasn't supposed to be shared with others. So, why now? Well, first is the obvious reason. No one is going around carrying swords anymore, and the ones that are have a tendency to be poor decision-makers or meth heads. For the rest of us, what is useful, for the likely combative scenarios we may face, a sword versus a sword should probably not be high on your list. The second reason is that they are giving us a description of what they are doing. Heck, they're even showing us. But this ultimately is only as good as our mind's ability to observe and replicate. Even if your mind is comprehending what you see with 20/20 vision, in the end, it isn't necessarily what they are practicing in their dojo. It would take some kind of miracle for us to replicate it exactly, and 99% of that path is going to be wasted effort. For the rest of us, there are excellent conceptual teachings conveyed in the instructional that can be seen in the practical techniques they demonstrate. For me, this is like watching someone else cook a recipe. I can try to imitate their technique and follow their directions, but at the end of cooking the dish, without using the same quality of ingredients, without imitating exactly their skill level of skill with a knife, or even tasting their finished product, I'll never produce exactly what they are doing. I'll produce something of my own. And if you're doing a Koryu, producing exactly what they are doing is your goal. To become an exact copy of the chef you are learning from. Or at least as near as you can become. Except I'm not doing a Koryu. I'm doing my own thing. I'm not trying to be a professional chef. I can, however, improve what I do in the kitchen by watching professionals. Maybe I'll learn a new way to cut vegetables, or get an idea on how to combine ingredients or seasonings in a way I'd never considered. This is the value of all cross-training, or even observing another martial art you're never planning to practice. This is why, if you have the right mentality, like a home cook watching a cooking show for a little inspiration, I recommend that you consider an instructional video like the Onaha Itoryu one. Just as I recommend we watch other arts like sumo, kendo, judo, Wing Chun, Xing Yi, Tai Chi, and others. The strategies, training methods, and reflections of other arts can help you better understand your own. So, not to extend the cooking metaphor too far, but let's get into the meat of this Onaha Itoryu instructional, and I'll give you two examples of how you can pull something meaningful for your training from it, even if what you do looks nothing like Japanese sword fighting. This video starts with a brief overview of the Onaha Itoryu school and how it came to be passed down to the modern era. Onaha Itoryu has an interesting history in that it was one of the two fencing schools patronized by the Tokugawa shogunate. Perhaps there is a reason why they were first noticed and then maintained their position for as long as they did, and then survived the fall of the Tokugawa and the warrior class. See, this is interesting to me. To know why something survives through multiple wars, regime changes, and massive cultural shifts, now, there's something here. But I have yet to wrap my head around it. Perhaps if I could, I would be a step closer to answering the earlier thoughts I had on the preservation of knowledge into the unknowable future. The next part of the video involves some useful principles with which to place one's training in. These appear to me to be highly useful to anyone as foundational concepts, a mental framework within which to align your training to acquire the tools to understand your failures and your wins. However, it would take quite a while to discuss and convey these, and honestly, this is a section that you're better off just watching the video and contemplating on your own. Now, however, next is a section on how to perform Onaha Itoryu etiquette. It is interesting to me to watch this section because if there's one thing I've learned about etiquette, it is that in traditional societies, there's usually an important reason behind it. It is only in what I might describe as young cultures, such as my own American society, where there is a lack of understanding and respect for the importance and utility of etiquette. This is usually not the case in older cultures, probably an accumulation of lessons learned. Because remember, at its most primal, the point of etiquette is to be a cushion and shield from misunderstandings that result in violence and death. Thus, etiquette is at the heart of de-escalation and a stable society. Show me a society, culture, or martial arts group that dispenses with etiquette, and you will likely find a trail of injuries, abuse, and exploitation. Even the ones who look down on traditional etiquette can be found to have substituted their own form in its place. If you've ever been to a gun range, you'll know there are a few simple rules you need to follow. These rules are for everyone's safety and to make sure there are no unintentional discharges. Following these simple rules is a very easy way to make sure that there are never unintended injuries or deaths. People who can't follow the etiquette of the gun range may get a warning, or they may simply get thrown out. It's always better to throw someone out than to risk your community's safety and well-being. And I think it should be the same in the martial arts. Now, I'm not suggesting we all adopt Onaha Itoryu etiquette, but it is interesting to see and think about why they have it and what purposes it serves. Oh, and before I continue, one of the first things you might notice about Onaha Itoryu is that the video was filmed in a church. The former headmaster was actually pastor of this church, and one of the things I noticed while watching the video was that the main room of the church is the perfect size for all the etiquette and kata that were being demonstrated. It made me wonder if perhaps the church had been designed not only with its primary function as a church, but since the pastor was the headmaster of Onaha Itoryu, the main room was also designed to the size and specifications that would also allow Onaha Itoryu to be practiced in during the rest of the week. An interesting combination of work, culture, hobby, profession, and philosophy. All right, so let's get into something directly from the video, a technique called kiri-otoshi. If you've done any Japanese sword martial arts before, you've probably already heard this term. It is the signature technique of Onohai Itoryu. One might say it is the technique they are best known for, their speciality, their signature dish. They say everything starts and ends with kiri-otoshi, and that all other techniques stem from their understanding of this basic and fundamental technique. Described crudely, kiri-otoshi is simply raising the sword above your head and cutting straight down. In practical application, it is far more detailed than just that. So, what we're not going to do today is belabor a particularly long, detailed description of how they raise a sword from the ready position above their head and then cut down, because what is most interesting about this is the concept behind when and why and how they perform the technique from a strategic standpoint. The first concept we need to talk about is sensen no sen. Some of you may recognize this as one of the classical ways to refer to initiative during a combative situation. Years ago, I wrote up a description of these on the Walking Tengu website, and I've included a link to that article in the show notes if that interests you. For review, the first is go no sen, and this is the initiative that comes after, the state of reacting to an opponent's action after they've started their own. Think of it as someone who has thrown a punch at you, you duck, and counterattack. The second is sen no sen. This is the initiative that comes before, the state of acting against one's opponent as they act because you anticipate what they're going to do. Think of it as someone who is in the act of punching you, so you slip the punch and in the same motion punch them back. This is a counterattack that occurs at the same time as the opponent's attack comes at you. And then there is sen sen no sen. This is the initiative that comes before the before, the state of acting against one's opponent before they take action as you intuitively sensed that they will do next, or I should say what they will do next. This is when you can tell someone is about to punch you, so you punch them first, hence it's a preemptive attack. Onohai Itoryu's kiri-otoshi uses this sensen no sen initiative. If you imagine two people facing each other with swords, you start to pressure your opponent. Perhaps you subtly start inching towards them. Perhaps you point the tip of your sword towards their eyes. Either way, you do something that puts pressure on your opponent, and they react to it by striking at you. Because you were the one triggering your opponent into striking at you, you can anticipate and move as they are striking with greater speed and determination, because in a sense, you've pushed your opponent into striking at you in the way that you want them to. You get them just far enough along with their attack that they are committed, but before they can complete it, you attack. This way, just one beat earlier, you deflect the attack, the tip of your opponent's sword drops to the side, and now your sword controls the center. The tip of your sword is fixed on their center line. You slide forward, and the tip of your sword stabs towards your opponent's throat. Now, if you do kendo or another Japanese martial art that involves a sword, you might notice that there are two moves here. The kiri-otoshi, which might be called a strike to the men in kendo, and then a ski, a stab. But we'll get back to this. One of the first things I noticed was that in the Japanese, they were using the term ayuchi. Ayuchi usually means a draw or a tie in an art like kendo, and usually means striking each other at the same time. With live swords or firearms, this could mean killing each other at the same time. The instructor makes a point that ties this back to sensen no sen here, that their use of kiri-otoshi uses a mutual strike, ayuchi, in a single tempo beat when responding to the opponent. This means that your deflection, strike and stab, effectively becomes just one movement. They're not just blocking the opponent's strike and then discreetly stabbing at the opponent with the next action in what might be considered two beats or two actions. In Onohai Itoryu, they call this Isho Nihai. One is victory, two is defeat, which is a nice bridge into our next lesson. But first, let's put this in terms of another martial art. How can we apply this lesson of sen sen no sen to something else? Recall that we start off by putting pressure on our opponent to get them to take action in some way. When I am looking to take an opponent to the ground, most people don't simply lose their balance and fall over, nor do they just let me pick them up and put them on the ground. No, I have to do something to get them to commit and then take advantage of that. You'll find the same lesson in many sports, particularly ones with goalies. If you can pressure the goalie into committing to block what they believe is an attempt to score on their net, let's say by diving in one direction, then you can score in the opposite direction. They can no longer respond quickly enough to block in the other direction because they've committed themselves one way. Now, if I take grips on an opponent and push and pull them in a variety of directions, I can put pressure on them to act a certain way. I can even use my footwork to bait them into trying to grab my leg and attempting their own takedown. If I can use this pressure to bait them into an attack and anticipate that attack, then I can have a counter already lined up as a response. This is, in a crude sense, the timing strategy that the Onoha Itoryu Kiryutoshi is teaching us. However, that looks in your own martial art. You pressure your opponent into committing to an action. You bait them into doing something you want them to do. Then, because you know what is coming, you are faster on the response than if you were simply reaching, or I should say, simply reacting to what your opponent was choosing to do for themselves. If you were doing that, this would simply be go no sen, the action that comes after. The next time you train, play with seeing if you can get your training partner to respond in certain ways. This might be taking a step, or moving in a certain way, or attacking in a particular way, and seeing if you're able to anticipate what they were going to do. If you can do that, well, then you can start having your counterattacks prepped and ready to take advantage of the offensive action you already know is coming. Which brings us back to the timing. It doesn't matter if you know what is coming if you can't take advantage of it. And if your opponent is technically making the first move, albeit one you baited them into taking, well, then you'll need to catch up on the timing. This brings us back to Isho Nihai, which means that in one beat, we do the Kiryutoshi, that is the overhead strike, and then the ski, the thrust. Not on a beat of one overhead cut and then one stab, but a cut that immediately flows into a stab in the same motion. As the narrator describes it, you win by making the two movements into one. If we break them up into two techniques, according to the teachings of Onoha Itoryu, as told to us in the video, we are defeated. This principle is one of the earliest things I try to get newcomers to start realizing when they start training with me. The ability to chain techniques is fundamental to escapes. If someone has you in a compromising position, let's say they're sitting on your waist or stomach and can rain down blows on your face, you're in a very vulnerable situation. Through a combination of quickly raising your hips to take their balance, and then grabbing an arm and trapping a leg, you can roll them over and get on top. Not a bad reversal or escape from what could have been a situation where you are beaten into a coma or possibly death. The problem is that you can't be sure they won't catch their balance as you're knocking them over and trying to grab an arm. Some people are so big you won't even be able to reach and grab their arm. The irony is, in the act of catching their balance so they don't fall on their faces, their legs become light, allowing you to slip a knee under one leg and then the other, coming to what we call guard. It's not as good as being on top, but it's a platform to control your opponent's strikes and launch a vast array of possible sweeps to get you on top and possibly disengaged. The key to pulling either of these moves off, and this is what is key for the new grappler, whether they're training for competition or self-defense, is that they have to chain these two basic techniques together. One is called a trap and roll, and the other is an elbow escape. Either one supports the other. If you do just one, and it is unsuccessful, in that one beat, your opponent can reestablish their balance and start launching their own attacks. However, since either one supports the other, you can do an elbow escape, and if it is unsuccessful, the way the opponent stops it puts them into a position open to a trap and roll. As just described, if you do a trap and roll and it's unsuccessful, then the way they resist it makes them vulnerable to the elbow escape. Thus, if you can take these two moves and do them both in one beat, effectively make two moves one, you can almost assure yourself an escape against any untrained or even lightly trained opponent. Hopefully, in some small way, you can see here how you can take the strategy as described in Onoha Itaru's Kiri Atosh and learn from the professional chef on how to combine your ingredients in a new way for your home cooking. Naturally, they then follow with the question that since this is an Aiuchi, a simultaneous strike, why is it that we are the winners? Well, this is because we are the ones controlling the scenario. We have the advantage of timing and initiative because we are influencing what is happening next. This is described in Onoha Itaru as you have already defeated your opponent with your mind. The way that we do this is what they describe as first doing Kiri Atosh to your own mind. Now, I'm interpreting this as we have to kill or defeat our base emotional thoughts, our natural fear and survival instincts that says, I don't want to lose. Even in a competitive modern combat sport, our bodies and subconscious minds, especially in the beginning, are not necessarily able to tell the difference between what is just a game and what is actually life and death. For many newcomers to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, the experience of rolling, that is wrestling, ends up being the closest they've come to feeling a life and death situation that day, or for some, their entire lives. I'm sure it's the same in other martial arts, but the lesson Onoha Itaru is teaching us here is that we have to defeat the subconscious survival instinct that instills fear of serious injury and death in us. With confidence, determination, and commitment, we, air quotes, cut our own mind to silence thoughts about losing or dying. Thus, we are able to act with greater clarity, focus, and speed. One of the things I particularly like about this Onoha Itaru teaching is that in the act of defeating ourselves to attain greater skill in combat, we do it by killing our own fear, ego, selfishness, and obstinate nature. If you're willing to be so committed to something that you're willing to die for it, then you will have the ability to enter a life and death situation, be it combative or otherwise, and act with a clarity and purpose unclouded by fear and emotions. This is fundamentally what I consider to be one of the most basic tools on any martial artist's tool belt. The ability to face serious injury and death and minimize the impact our fear, pride, and selfishness has on our ability to act. For example, when something bad happens, look at the people who are running away and the people who are running towards the danger. It's not that there's anything wrong with the people running away. It's natural to flee from danger and preserve your life. It's basic survival instincts. For myself and some others, I train in life-saving techniques, in first aid, in shooting, and yes, even in the martial arts, so that I can run towards the gunshots, towards the fire, towards the car crash, and do something useful and meaningful for the people who can't run away. If we can absorb the lessons of sen, sen, no sen, controlling the initiative, and thus the timing through our pressure, and isho, nihai, that is, two beats as one, then we can all be better martial artists. So, hopefully, you gained a little something for your home cooking, in other words, your training today. At the very least, maybe you'll consider checking out this video from Budo Japan so you can get a much clearer idea of what I was trying to describe and communicate to you. There is a lot more in the video than I was able to cover today. I would particularly also suggest studying the Kumitachi section of the video. There is a lot of nuance and detail in that section that we don't have time to touch on, but I'm convinced there are depths of what is happening there that are really challenging to try and grasp just from the video. I'll have to go back and study it closer myself. Either search for Budo Japan in your search engine of choice or look for them on Vimeo. It's not particularly hard to find them. And the video you are looking for is titled Onoha Itaru Volume 1 Kiri Atosh. Maybe I won't be a professional Onoha Itaru chef, but maybe I can make my home cooking just a little better from what I saw in this video. I hope you will too. As always, remember, don't just talk about philosophy, but like your martial art, live it.